I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. This news is funded by viewers and listeners like you. Please support our work at democracynow.org/support. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
There was a direct bombing to the hospital. They forced people inside the hospital, including patients, relatives. Oh, yeah, Allah. Patients, relatives, and healthcare workers to evacuate immediately.
Israeli troops storm the largest hospital in southern Gaza after a days-long siege. We'll get a report from a doctor inside Nasser Hospital, and we'll go to Rafah, where fears are mounting Israel will launch a ground invasion. We'll also speak with the former head of Human Rights Watch, Ken Roth. Then President Biden's urging the House to vote on the Senate's multi-billion-dollar foreign aid bill that includes $14 billion to Israel.
Voting for $14 billion in military aid to help Israel commit war crimes in Gaza is a moral outrage. The senators who voted for it should be ashamed of themselves. What we need is a ceasefire, not more weapons to Israel.
We'll speak with national security expert Bill Hartung about Washington's skewed priorities. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In Kansas City, Missouri, at least one person died and 22 were wounded during a shooting at the parade celebrating Sunday's Super Bowl victory by the Kansas City Chiefs. A beloved local DJ and mother named Lisa Lopez Galvan was killed in the shooting. She hosted a show called Taste of Tejano on the local community radio station KKFI that also airs Democracy Now! Every morning. The Kansas City Fire Department said eight of the shooting victims suffered, quote, immediately life-threatening injuries. Nine of the shooting victims were children. The Kansas City schools were closed so that kids could attend the parade. Police have detained three people in connection with the shooting. Police are still determining a motive, but have ruled out terrorism. This is Kansas City Police Chief Stacey Graves.
I'm angry at what happened today. The people who came to this celebration should expect a safe environment. We had over 800 law enforcement officers, Kansas City and other agencies, at the location to keep everyone safe. Because of bad actors, which were very few, this tragedy occurred. Even in the presence of uniformed law enforcement officers who, again, ran towards them and took them into custody.
Kansas City Mayor Quinton Lucas said he and his wife had to run for safety during the shooting.
Parades, rallies, schools, movies, it seems like almost nothing is safe. And we had hundreds of law enforcement there working hard today.
Missouri has some of the weakest gun control laws in the country, with no universal background checks, no assault weapon restrictions, no ban on large capacity magazines, no waiting periods to purchase a gun, and no domestic violence gun laws. The shooting in Kansas City came on the sixth anniversary of the Parkland, Florida school massacre, when a 19-year-old gunman shot dead 17 people and injured 17 others at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. To mark the anniversary, gun control advocates traveled to Washington to play for lawmakers a series of AI-generated audio messages featuring the voices of students killed in Parkland. This is AI-generated message from Joaquin Oliver, who was shot dead at the age of 17.
Hello, I'm Joaquin Oliver. 6 years ago, I was a senior at Parkland. Many students and teachers were murdered on Valentine's Day that year by a person using an AR-15. But you don't care. You never did. It's been 6 years and you've done nothing, not a thing to stop all the shootings that have continued to happen since. The thing is, I died that day in Parkland. My body was destroyed by a weapon of war. I'm back today because my parents used AI to recreate my voice to call you. Other victims like me will be calling too, again and again, to demand action. How many calls will it take for you to care? How many dead voices will you hear before you finally listen? Every day your inaction creates more voices. If you fail to act now, we'll find someone who will.
The AI-generated audio appears on a new website called The Shotline, where the recordings can be sent to lawmakers. On Wednesday, Guac Oliver's parents, Manny and Patricia, were set to appear on CNN to talk about the new project when news broke about the shooting in Kansas City.
We had an entirely different interview that we were going to do here just to talk about some of the work that you guys are doing on Capitol Hill, trying to bring about awareness and change. And you see this happening as you were here visiting Washington. What is on your mind as you're watching this?
I'm not surprised at all. It's like literally we interrupt this interview because we have another mass shooting going on. And then you might be interrupting that one because it was going to be another one. So it never stops.
In news from Gaza, Israeli forces have bombed and raided Nasser Hospital in Khan Yunis, which the World Health Organization has described as the backbone of the health system in southern Gaza. The raid comes a day after Israel ordered thousands of displaced Palestinians and patients to evacuate. One doctor inside the hospital recorded an audio message from inside the hospital Wednesday.
And now the drones, the speakers, they announcing for doctors inside the hospital to move outside the hospital.
Israeli soldiers and tanks surrounding the hospital from all sides. Shootings and bombings still continue.
Israel is facing growing international pressure to call off plans to launch a ground invasion of Rafah, where over a million displaced Palestinians have sought refuge. The leaders of Canada, Australia, and New Zealand have issued a joint statement calling for an immediate ceasefire, warning a military operation into Rafah would be, quote, catastrophic. Palestinian UN Ambassador Riyad Mansour spoke on Wednesday at the United Nations.
Our effort is to do everything possible to stop Israel from committing this crime of depopulating the Gaza Strip and stopping the war immediately. The guarantee to do that is to have a resolution calling for a ceasefire, and we hope that the Security Council would elevate itself to that responsibility.
In other news from Gaza, Palestinian journalist Mutaz al-Ghafari was killed on Wednesday in Gaza City in an Israeli airstrike that also killed his wife and his child. By one count, 125 journalists have been killed in Gaza since October 7th. Ceasefire talks in Egypt have broken down after Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu reportedly blocked Israeli negotiators from returning to Cairo for follow-up talks to secure the release of Israeli hostages held in Gaza. In response, relatives of hostages have held protests outside the home of Netanyahu and other members of Israel's war cabinet. In a statement, one group of relatives said, quote, "This decision amounts in effect to sacrificing knowingly all of the hostages' lives," unquote. At least 11 people, including six children, have been killed in southern Lebanon in a wave of Israeli strikes as tension along the Israeli-Lebanon border escalates. Israel's attack came hours after a missile attack from Lebanon killed an Israeli soldier and wounded eight others. In news from Russia, at least five people have died in a suspected Ukraine air attack on a shopping mall in the Russian city of Belgorod. 18 people were reportedly injured in the attack. This comes a day after Ukrainian forces blew up a Russian landing ship off the coast of occupied Crimea. Australia's parliament has overwhelmingly approved a motion calling for the release of imprisoned WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange, who is an Australian citizen. The vote came ahead of a critical appeal hearing before the British High Court of Justice in London next week. Supporters of the resolution included Australia's Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, who's urged the United States to drop its request to extradite Assange, who faces up to 175 years in a U.S. prison for publishing classified documents exposing U.S. war crimes in Iraq and Afghanistan. Assange has been held in London's infamous Belmarsh prison since 2019, awaiting possible extradition to the U.S. Prior to that, he spent 7 years inside Ecuador's embassy in London. He had political exile there. Australian MP Andrew Wilkie introduced the resolution.
This will be the time for all of us to take a stand, to stand up and to take a stand, and to stand with Julian Assange, stand for the principles of justice. Friends, stand for the principles of media freedom and the rights of journalists to do their job. This has gone on too long, that it must be brought to an end. And I'm confident if this Parliament can support this motion this afternoon, Deputy Speaker, it will send a very powerful political signal to the British government and to the US government.
To see the two Belmarsh tribunals that were held at the National Press Club last year, you can go to democracynow.org. In news from California, the Bay Area Air Quality Management Agency says it's won a decisive victory in a years-long legal battle against two oil refineries in the East Bay. In a pair of settlements, Chevron and the Martinez Refining Company have agreed to cut emissions and pay up to $138 million in penalties and fines for violating agency rules regulating airborne particulate matter. In labor news, thousands of Uber and Lyft drivers took part in a strike Wednesday demanding better pay and working conditions in what organizers say was the largest rideshare strike in U.S. history. Delivery workers from DoorDash also took part. The Valentine's Day strike came on the same day Uber's stock price jumped to a new high after the company announced it would buy back up to $7 billion worth of company shares in a move that will benefit shareholders. In other labor news, flight attendants picketed at 30 airports Tuesday in a national day of action demanding higher wages and a new contract. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York.
And I'm Nermeen Sheikh. Welcome to our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world. Israeli troops stormed the main hospital in southern Gaza today after a days-long siege. Nasser Hospital in Khan Yunus was the largest functional hospital in Gaza. Thousands of displaced Palestinians have been taking shelter there among hundreds of wounded. Gaza's health ministry spokesperson, Ashraf Al-Qidra, said in a statement that Israeli forces demolished the southern wall of the complex and stormed the hospital, adding that they turned it into a military barracks. He said troops targeted ambulances, tents of the displaced, and bulldozed mass graves inside the hospital. Israeli troops have also ordered medical staff to transfer all patients to another wing of the complex, including patients in the intensive care unit and the nursery. Hours earlier, Israeli forces bombed a wing of the hospital, killing one patient and wounding several others.
Democracy Now! Was able to receive updates from inside Nasser Hospital several hours before Israeli troops stormed inside. Dr. Khaled Alsar is one of the last remaining surgeons inside the hospital. He described the bombing of the hospital as well as an incident when a quadcopter drone opened fire on doctors inside. You can hear the bombs falling in the background as he speaks.
There was direct bombing to the hospital. They forced people inside the hospital, including patients, relatives.
Oh, ya Allah.
Patients, relatives, and healthcare workers to evacuate immediately. And you can hear in the background the continuous bombing in the hospital.
Every minute and every hour, we have a new update. Just 1 hour ago, and now the time here is 3 a.m. after midnight. At 2 a.m., Israeli army bombed the hospital directly with a rocket, which hit directly into the patient wards. Six patients were injured again, and one of the patients died on his bed. Israeli army is trying to communicate with the people inside the hospital every time to warn them and threat them to evacuate immediately, even if it's after midnight. The speakers on a drone shouting on people that they have to go out the hospital immediately, or they will bomb the hospital. And unfortunately, they have committed their warning and bombed the hospital directly just 1 hour ago. The situation here is getting worse every time and every minute. Yesterday, I tried to evacuate my parents from the hospital because I have them here with me inside the hospital. But through a secure passage, as they claim that it's a secure passage for people and refugees to be evacuated through, in front of tanks and snipers and soldiers, a bulldozer and a tank tried to approach the people, so they were afraid and came back to the hospital here, as a lot of the refugees. Actually, the situation here in the hospital at this moment is in chaos. All of the patients, all the relatives, refugees, and also the medical staff are afraid because of what happened. We could not imagine that at any time the Israeli army will bomb the hospital directly, and they will kill patients and medical personnel directly by bombing the hospital building. Yesterday also, Israeli snipers and Israeli quadcopters, which is a drone, carry on it an AR and with a sniper, they shot all over the building, and they shot my colleague, Dr. Karam. He has a shrapnel inside his head. I can upload for you a CT for him. You can see, it's alhamdulillah, it was superficial, nothing serious. But a lot of bullets inside their bedroom and their restroom. Because I'm not easily getting internet access, you can share my voices or edit them to spread the news and spread the truth and what's happening to us right now.
That was Dr. Khaled Al-Sir, one of the last remaining surgeons inside Nasser Hospital. Israeli troops stormed the hospital a few hours after he sent in those reports. The raid on Nasser Hospital in Khan Yunis comes as fears are mounting that Israel will act on its plans to launch a ground invasion into Rafah, the southernmost part of Gaza that Israel had previously declared a safe zone. Over half of Gaza's population, some 1.4 million people, including over 600,000 children, are crammed into Rafah after being displaced from their homes and driven south during Israel's brutal assault. There are now massive tent encampments pushing up to the Egyptian border. International pressure is mounting for Israel to call off its ground invasion. The UN's top humanitarian official, Martin Griffiths, said that an assault on Rafah, quote, could lead to a slaughter.
We go now to Rafah, where we're joined by journalist Akram Al-Sattari. Akram, welcome back to Democracy Now! We have just heard these chilling reports from inside Nasser Hospital right before Israel occupied it and the bombing of it. You've sent out a picture of some of the ammunition used by the Israeli military. Explain what happened inside and also what's happening around you in Rafah.
Well, the situation continues to be extremely dire in the vicinity and inside Nasser Medical Complex. The Israeli occupation forces have been targeting the vicinity of the area, including some of the UNRWA shelters not far away from the hospitals. They are destroying, and they were destroying the walls of the hospitals, the exterior wall of the hospitals. They targeted the wards of the hospital, the inwards of the hospital. They targeted the surgery department in the hospital and injured at least one surgeon while he was inside the surgery department. They asked people to leave the hospital, and when they're leaving the hospitals, they shot them dead. They asked one guy whose hands were tied, and he was sent to the people inside the hospital, to the internally displaced people, asking them to leave the hospital. And then when he ended up speaking to the people and returning to the Israelis because he was fearful from death, he was killed, and he was left on the ground. Around 80 bodies laid right in front of the outer gate of the Nasser Hospital, up to some 200 meters away from the hospital. Fear, death, and shock are enclaving and encircling the people in that area. The Israeli occupation forces continue their operation, continue targeting Nasser Hospital, continue ask people to leave, and when they're leaving, they snipe them. There are some disturbing images and footage of the people, of the bodies of the people being eaten and devoured by the dogs and by the stray cats. People who were just communicating with their relatives were describing the horrors, and they were also documenting those horrors. Israel continues to target the hospitals. They target Nasser Hospital, and they are still targeting Al Amal Hospital, not far away from Nasser Hospital, around 2.5 kilometers in Al Amal neighborhood, and they continue the very same policy. The policy of targeting the medical complexes, targeting the medical personnel, targeting the patients, targeting their escorts, and spreading the fear and destruction in that area. Some of the people who were inside Khan Yunis were rushing, were pulling the beds of their dears, some of them in the orthopedic department that was targeted, some of them in the general surgery department, and they were carrying or pulling the beds for around 5 or 6 or 7 kilometers to reach Rafah. As you can see now, the Abu Yusuf al-Najjar Hospital, where I am located now, has been receiving numbers of the people who were inside Nasser Hospital and Al Amal Hospital. They received them. They are trying to expand the bed capacity of the hospital. They're trying to accommodate to the influx of people who are fleeing from Nasser Hospital, who are fleeing for their safety, who are fleeing for their life, and they end up staying in tents like those, where sanitation is at question, where the quality of the medical care provision is at question too, where the large number of people who are already staying inside the hospital prevent them from absorbing or accommodating any other additional number of people injured. The health system at large has been struggling. The infrastructure of the whole city of Rafah cannot absorb or accommodate the large number of Palestinians inside Rafah. Around 1.2 million Palestinians were staying in Rafah. Now tens of thousands of them are leaving Rafah and heading towards Khan Yunis and towards Gaza central area, with doubts of the continuous and with fear of the looming ground invasion that is likely to be a replication of everything that was done in Gaza in the north and everything that was done in Khan Yunis. People were hopeful that the ICJ, International Court of Justice, would bring them justice, or would at least make Israel reconsider its tactics when it comes to protected object, human objects, and health facilities, also journalists. But it looks like Israel is continuing the very same approach, is continuing the very same way of targeting. We were hopeful as journalists that Israel wouldn't be targeting Nasser Hospital or Al Amal Hospital. But unfortunately, the targeting is still continuous, and the large number of people, tens of thousands of people who were stuck in Khan Yunis, are now being targeted, either by the artillery fire, or by the quadcopters, or by the F-16, or by all the other means, and they are being killed, and they are being left, even the ones who are injured, are being left to die on the ground. People were describing the atrocities they have been seeing. People have been crying over their dears who were screaming for help, but they couldn't help them. People are now crying over their dears who are still waiting in Khan Yunis and cannot be reached, cannot be rescued, cannot be saved, and they are likely to lose their life, like many others who lost their life the very same way. As to Rafah, Rafah is the place now for around, as I said, 1.2 million Palestinians. The area is underserved, no good infrastructure, no organized camping, no organized tents, no organized service of provision, and the pressure resulting from this massive number of people is overburdening the municipalities, is overburdening the civil defense, is overburdening the Ministry of Health, and is overburdening the international organizations. The concern has been voiced by the UNRWA, by the World Food Program, by the UNICEF, by the United Nations Development Program, and they are all warning that any ground offensive targeting Rafah is going to result in a catastrophe that is bigger and much, much more bigger than the one that took place in the Gaza and the north, and the one that is taking place right now in Khan Yunis. People in Gaza believe that no single international power is able now to bring an end to the ongoing misery that has been caused by the ongoing occupation and the indiscriminate targeting, as described by some of the Palestinians. Some of them are already on the beds recovering, some of them are struggling for their life, and some of them are deprived from the very basic humanitarian need to food and water. Water is missing in Gaza, Food is missing in Gaza, and people have been struggling, not for their own food need, but rather for their children's food need, for the elderly people's food need. So the situation is dire, and it continues to aggravate into something that is extremely life-threatening, that needs an imminent intervention for the sake of stopping any atrocities that are likely to happen and stopping the atrocities that are taking place now. And I'm quoting many of the Gazans that I spoke to, many of the ones who are worried about their dears, many of the ones that are worried also about their own safety, many of the ones who are worried about the future and what it holds for them. They think it is about time that something happens. They think they have suffered enough. They think they have died enough. They think they have been hungry enough. They think they have been thirsty enough. They think they have been homeless enough. And this is the outcry, not only of the 1.2 million Gazans who are staying in Rafah, but also of million Gazans who are in Gaza and the north, who are in Khan Yunis and who are in Rafah. People have been deprived from the access to very basic essential food supplies and water supplies. They have been struggling, they have been facing famine, they have been seeing children who are dying from the hunger, and this is an outcry from them to the whole world that this needs to stop, and the madness that is taking place in Gaza, and I'm again quoting the people who are talking to me, the madness needs to come to an end. As I'm talking to you, the unmanned drones are hovering all around the Gaza Strip. Day and night, continuous bombardment in different parts of Rafah, in different parts of Gaza Strip, at large, and they continue to take the lives and hopes of the Palestinians. Palestinians who are living in Rafah and who are living in Gaza alike have been exhausting all the negative and positive coping mechanisms. The number of people who are injured is inconceivable. The number of people killed and the way they are being killed is also inconceivable. And people continue to suffer, and they expect that more suffering is coming if the international community fails once again to protect them.
Akram al-Satri, if you could, you yourself right now are standing outside a hospital. We can hear possibly a drone overhead. If you could describe the situation there, and you mentioned how people, Palestinians there, are lacking even the most basic essentials, food, water. Tell us what humanitarian aid is getting in, if any.
Well, I can't describe the situation. I will have to describe the way I'm feeling about things and how things are unfolding. Every single time I walk one step in Gaza, I always imagine myself being blown up by an unmanned drone or by F-16 missile or by a quadcopter or by whatever weapon that is used by Israel. Every time I'm walking in every single home I pass by, I feel that this home might be targeted and I might be ending up dying and killed under the rubble of that house. Every single place I stay, I moved from my home 6 times. So I am homeless and displaced 6 times now. And I'm waiting what would happen in Rafah. People in Rafah, as I told you, people are deprived from everything. Even the very basic essential things, the very essential things that are needed to lead a normal life or a semi-normal life or a life of internally displaced people. Even the internally displaced people in Gaza are unique and different than any other internally displaced people all over the world. All over the world, people are receiving and accessing food and water supplies. According to the Sphere book, Sphere book is a book that has been developed for the sake of just identifying the quantities that are needed and the calories that are needed for the people to stay alive at the time of famine or at the time of conflict, man-made or natural disaster. So people are not even accessing that very limited. The threshold of food that is needed for the people in Gaza is not met because the UN agencies that have been helping the Gazans are now tarnished, are now assaulted, are now attacked, and now the funding that is going to them is suspended. So people in Rafah and other areas have to do what would they have to do to survive. Some of the people in the Gaza and the north had to do to use the food to feed of the animals, to ground it, the corn, to ground it, to make sure that they can bake some bread for their families. They don't have rice, they don't have water, they don't have canned food, they don't have anything. And they have been calling for the world to stop that. And they have been even, the very emotional thing about that is that everything that is happening, including the most and profoundly shocking things, are happening live on air. People are just documenting their death. People are documenting their suffering. People are documenting their hunger. People are documenting their thirst. People are documenting their injury. People even documenting the hospitals when they are being raided and stormed in by the Israeli occupation forces. And the whole world, they have a feeling that the whole world is watching and that is not doing anything. And that feeling of helplessness is another way to kill the Palestinians. So if they're killed once, they're killed twice. Once by the ongoing bombardment that has been taking place, that has been documented, and the second time by not offering the fitting homage for those people, by serving justice and by stopping aggression, like was said by the many people that I talked to. The situation is extremely dire. You will never be able to imagine the things that are happening. When you're walking down the streets, when you see small children out crying for food, when you see them lining up hundreds of people for a very limited one pot